Okay. my name is Ilya Baldin. I represent the Orca Bin team. Should we get out of the room? And you've already heard a presentation by the other half of the PI team on this project, Jeff Chase, about the Orca framework that allows us to do what a lot of the things that are expected of a Gini control plane. So I will not be talking about this today a whole lot. What I will concentrate on is the other half of our proposal, which has to do with slicing a null optical network, which is the BEN part. BEN is a breakable experimental network. So just a brief project overview. Basically, as I said, there are two parts. There is the ORCA framework, which has a very robust prototype built by Jeff and his students over a number of years, and it can do a number of things that are expected of a Gini control plane when it comes to edge resources. And the other half of the project is BEN, the breakable experimental network, which is a dark fiber metro testbed we have deployed in Research Triangle Park that serves as a substrate, as a test substrate for extending ORCA to be able to control it and be able to sliver and slice it in such a way that sort of demonstrates the flexibility of the approach that Gini is taking to the control plane problem. The third partner in our proposal is Infinera. They're our industry partner in providing us some equipment and also engineering support for the equipment that we have deployed in BEN. So our goal for our project is to extend ORCA to support BEN resources and demonstrate, and in year one we'll demonstrate VLANs, and also at the same time we're going lower sort of towards the phi layer and trying to demonstrate how a Gini-like control framework can operate on networks of this type. Just a brief mention, we are part of Cluster D with three other projects. Kansei, with Anish Arora and Hongwei Zhang, Vehicular Mobile Network, also known as DieselNet, of Brian Levine, Mark Corner, Brian Lin, and Vice, with Jim Carosi, Michael Zink, Prashant Chinoy, David Irwin, from UMass, and we're very pleased to be working on this. And the reason why I'm bringing them up is because actually the type of issues that they're addressing in their projects actually complements the issues that we're trying to address. So I'm fairly new to the area which Gini is trying to address, which is the sort of virtual network virtualization, the ability to slice and sliver resources, provide guarantees on these slices in that context. So when I started thinking about what does it mean to slice a network, sort of this picture came to mind, which is very, very simplistic. Three axes of dimensions. We have node resources, topology, and link bandwidth. And in this three-dimensional space, a network slice seems to me to represent some sort of a function that goes through this discrete space. But then as I started thinking more about this, it occurred to me that things weren't nearly as simple as I thought. Because really, if you bring in wireless, particularly, into this, and also optical network, let's start with wireless. Topology, which is one of the axes in this figure, is no longer a valid abstraction. You're really talking about geographic extents now, right? So that's one dimension. Node resources, I should have mentioned, I mean both core and edge resources. So those could be the computational nodes at the edge as well as programmable routers in the core, for example. And then the third dimension, that's the link slivering. And again, to me, it seems like simply saying that a link is just bandwidth is not sufficiently flexible. So to me, it seems like link slivering really boils down to spectrum and bandwidth and also adaptations. You know, no network is flat in terms of its stack, right? The typical network is, say, gigabit Ethernet on top of some sort of TDM solution, on top of some sort of DWDM solution. And all of these things should be expressible And all of these things should be sliverable, at least ideally, in my humble point of view. And again, this is sort of our project philosophy on this. Doesn't necessarily, it's the right philosophy for Genie as a whole. So once I kind of arrived at this picture in my mind, I started thinking, well, what does it mean? What does it mean to sliver a link? Let's just set aside the other two axes for now. The node resources, a lot of work's been done in this area already, right? I mean, if you take Protogenie, Planet Lab and Emulab, they've done a great deal of work in this direction, and to some extent, kind of going along the vertical axis. So, really, what I wanted to look at, what does it mean to sliver a link? And so I arrived at this very complicated diagram, which actually is a tree. I know it doesn't look like one, but it is. And so if we look at it, I separated it in a very traditional way. If you take a link as the root, you have point-to-point type links and multi-axis links. And let's start from the bottom. Let's say we take multi-axis links. Well, they can be copper or wireless, right? And you have 10 megabits per second, 100 megabits per second CSMACD. You have DOCSIS. And you have wireless in various parts of the spectrum and also various types of framing. You have 802.11, 802.15, 802.16. That's just the multi-axis part. When you get to-point links, you get fiber, copper, free space optics, God knows what else, actually. Yet I did not fill it. This is meant to be a sampling, not a complete picture. I just want to step back and just kind of say this up front. And if you're seeing errors or things that I omitted that should have been here, please tell me. So when you go into point-to-point links, again, you have sort of similar fiber. If you get to fiber, that's where you get the interesting picture because it starts to look a little bit like wireless. Because in fiber, you can manage spectrum in a way not dissimilar from the way you manage spectrum in wireless networks, except that the spectrum is contained inside the fiber. And so you're not dealing with geographic extents, you're just dealing with point-to-point connections. But you get basically the same type of arrangement. So the important thing to notice here is there's nodes on this tree. The length of these sort of thickened parts actually is meaningful. And that is, if you look at the top, you have sort of link spectrum, transport bandwidth, layer 2 bandwidth, layer 3 bandwidth. These are all sort of sliverable categories. And then if you take a category at each level, it propagates up, right? So taking bandwidth at layer 2 implies you're taking some transport bandwidth and implies you're taking some spectrum, thanks to Shannon and his law. So then slivering a link really kind of needs to be taking into account these dependencies. The color coding in the point-to-point section of this slide is significant because this is where Ben is. Because we are in a dark fiber network, what we have really on our network is the ability to provision spectrum and transport bandwidth at once using the Infinera DTNs and their bandwidth virtualization feature. This is the one of the selling points of their equipment. One of the distinguishing characteristics is their ability, unlike other transport equipment manufacturers, to abstract away spectrum provisioning and just be able to provision bandwidth in ODU1 type increments. And then on top of that, you can layer 1 gigabits per second, 10 gigabits per second fiber channel. And then, of course, on top of those, you can layer layer 2 bandwidth sliverable commodities like VLANs. And then on top of that, you can do layer 3. You can put layer 3 sliverable commodities. And so the reason they're not connected is because the diagram was just getting too busy. I just left them as is. But really, if you take any one of those, you can see how provisioning bandwidth at one layer eventually translates into taking a link or part of the link. And so to me, the ability to express these is important. So if we look at copper, sort of one example here, 10 gigabit or 10 megabit per second CSMACD, the reason that this node is so long is because the 10 megabit per second spec really locks you in, starting from layer 2 all the way into a spectrum through the electrical specification. There's nothing you can change in it. So that's why the node in this part of the tree has to be long and span multiple of these categories. So incidentally, cluster D, the rest of cluster D, resides right there. So in our cluster, we actually have sort of very nice dichotomy between point-to-point and multi-axis links, and seems like we have some common interest in the need to be able to express some of these dependencies. So now, if I just were to get back to what Ben is a four-node dark fiber network on which we have certain types of equipment deployed, among which, at the bottom sort of a stack, we have fiber switches, which allow us to establish a fiber path between nodes. On top of those, we have Infinera DTN platforms, which allow us to provision circuits at multiples of ODU1. And then on top of those, we have Cisco and Juniper routers, which where we get to VLANs, VRFs, and the features that are more, I think, familiar and, to those who work at sort of higher layers of the network. If we look at what Ben actually looks topologically like, it's a ring. However, again, because we have fiber switches, we can actually arrange it in a number of other topologies. And each of the four POPs looks sort of like this on the left. The fiber switch is used both as an enabler for experimentation on specifically on Genie, as well as an enabler for switching between different teams. So the Ben is meant to be a shared resource for the network research community in Research Triangle Park, which includes Duke University, North Carolina State University, and UNC Chapel Hill. And so the way Ben works is we have multiple teams that can be time-sharing this resource, and they can be placing their equipment at Ben POPs in order to run their experiments. And so in this case, RENCI Ben project is one of the teams. And so these fiber switches in this case act both as a sort of enabler for our experimentation to set up fiber paths so that we can actually do slivering that way, as well as sort of acting as a separator between teams when we need to do kind of this coarse-grained time division between experiments. So if we look at what Ben can do, at the very basic level, we have these multiple configuration possibilities as far as slicing Ben. So the top stays pretty much the same. We have sort of Eucalyptus Zen cluster on the top. Underneath it, there are Cisco 6509s, then Infinera DTNs. Underneath them are reconfigurable fiber switches. So the easiest configuration is sort of an optical bypass of one node and going between, in this case, UNC and Duke, and skipping RENCI optically. However, we can also do this and let the Infinera equipment figure out the best transport path. And so these are meant to be demonstrative of the complexity and the various levels of adaptation that are possible between the different networking technologies. So to my mind, we're sorely in need of the ability to express this complexity, both in terms of ability of the testbed to support it, as well as the ability of a researcher to request one or the other. On top of that, we have an added layer of complexity as to how to achieve one of these two or other possible configurations. For instance, the Infinera equipment supports a very complete GMPLS implementation. So really, in order to request a specific path, all you need to do is touch one of the nodes and through a uni request a connection, and the magic will happen internally. What that does, though, is that if you are a clearinghouse or an aggregate manager, that leaves you somewhat in the dark as to what exactly happened. All you know is the bandwidth sort of happened from one end to the other, but you don't know if you can make guarantees to any incoming researcher whether you can do it again. And so either A, you need some sort of transparency out of equipment so you can periodically poll it about what the state is, or the alternative, and they're not mutually exclusive, by the way, the alternative is that you, as part of your aggregate controller, for instance, introduce your own control plane that goes out and touches individual pieces of equipment and tells them exactly the configuration you're looking for. And so on top of that, reconfigurable fiber switches, these are from Pilatus, they simply have command line interfaces, and SNMP interfaces. They do not use GMPLS. So you're kind of left with this unholy mix of mechanisms, and somehow the system needs to be able to make sense out of them, find a subset that's workable, and be able to provide a working service to researchers. And so, having said that, we get back to my original mental picture of what a network slice looks like. Again, as it's sort of a function in the three-dimensional discrete space. And so, in our proposal, we tried to emphasize the fact that what we thought was necessary was a mechanism that would work in this three-dimensional space to be able to both describe capabilities and requests. And at that time, and as far as I can tell at present, there really isn't a mechanism that does it to the full extent that we look for. There are two available. RSpec, that's been in existence for a long time, and really, if you look at the placement of it, RSpec takes a good care of specifying node resources and to some degree topology, and the extrusion of the fatness of letters of RSpec suggests that it does go some way to be able to describe link bandwidth. That's why RSpec is sort of so fat, and NDL is sort of so thin. NDL is another alternative, network description language, which I will talk about in a minute. It really is excellent with respect to this axis and also this axis. It has nothing along this axis. So, and this is kind of what we're getting to. Yep. So where does NDL come from? University of Amsterdam, SNE group. It's been under active development for quite a while. It's in use within GLIF, Global Lambda Integration Facility. It is importantly not XML, just XML. It's actually OWL, which means it's an ontology, which means you can reason on it, which also means you can take advantage of a slew of tools developed by the semantic web community to encode your knowledge about the network, to query that ontology about the network, and to make some choices. And when I say reason, I don't mean, HAL 2000, hello, Dave. This is more on a much lower level, making simple inferences about the capabilities, adding transitive closures, verifying cardinality constraints, things like that. So, and the nice thing about the ontological approach also, and that's something that I discovered in my other project with my colleagues from NC State that was funded through FIND, which was with ontologies, it doesn't matter whether something that's a document in an ontology, whether it's a request or a capability specification. You can merge the two together and you can reason on them. And that's very important to me because that means you don't have to come up with a separate language to specify requests versus capabilities, which is also what RSpec tries to do. But with the NDL, for us, the particular attractive feature is the fact that it does such a good job of working on this axis here, because that's where they started. They sort of went from here and then to here. And so it's based on the G805 ITUT standard that basically describes the concept of adaptations, how you can have IP on top of Ethernet, on top of TDM, on top of WDM, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very good at expressing this complexity. So the strengths of it, I sort of already went over. It expresses adaptations and encapsulations freely. It expresses topologies. It expresses both configurations and requests, understands the concept of wavelengths based on rich set of semantic web technologies, which we can rely on as existing instead of doing research on them. The missing pieces are wavebands, spectrum extents. They don't have that yet, but seems like relatively easy to add, because after all, these are just schemas. And edge and core node resources. This is a big one, obviously, that's not there. And that's something we're kind of trying to figure out the best approach to solving that. So as far as how to integrate it with the other half of our project, as I said, we have sort of two halves. We have the Orca part and then the Ben part. And so the NDL is really what brings the two together. Orca associates property lists with resources, which are interpreted by controller plugins, which is a nice thing, which means that the core doesn't have to do it. So, in its simplest In its simplest form, a property list is an XML document, which also obviously extends to OWL documents and NDL documents. So a band controller, an aggregate controller, could utilize an RDF framework, perhaps attached to, you know, to a reasoner, or maybe not, maybe just a kind of a Sparkle query engine, we don't know yet. And it can operate on these descriptions and do some limited reasoning on it. And the requests also take the form of NDL, and they can be merged with the capabilities also expressed in NDL. And again, they kind of work together very well in that sense. So current and future progress. We're currently designing an NDL description of Ben based on some of the tools that are available from University of Amsterdam and also some sort of good old hand coding. Determining various possible configurations for demos so we can encode them, because near-term goal is sort of doing some canned demos expressed as NDL and then processed by the clearinghouse and the aggregate controller and the clearinghouse. And then longer-term goals, for me, it's important to be able to address the question of spectrum extents, spectrum regions. Obviously, edge and core node resources, expressing those is important. And going to the multi-domain case, which is sort of the holy grail of networking in some quarters anyways. So possibly going in that direction should the community working on Genie decide that that is an important aspect of something that a Genie control plane should support. I'm done.